Hello and welcome to the First Right Podcast, your weekly dose of conservative news brought to you by Restoration of America. I'm Hayden Ludwig, Research Director for Restoration News. Be sure to check out our content at restoration-news.com. Joining us this week is Abby Johnson, a former Planned Parenthood clinic director turned pro-life hero. Now Abby leads the crusade to take down the left's cult of death and, critically, to minister to the women devastated by our nation's lax abortion laws. Folks, we think you're going to love what she has to say. Abby, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with your fascinating background, because obviously you weren't always a pro-life advocate. In fact, it sounds like you weren't even necessarily always pro-life. Can you tell us about how that change came about?
I got involved working at Planned Parenthood in college. I did not know anything about the organization, actually. I grew up in a conservative home and Southern Baptist home. And, you know, we didn't talk about abortion in my home. So I think my parents were just kind of like, oh, well, you know, we've taught her the biblical pathway to marriage, and that's abstinence. And so as long as she follows that, then abortion's not going to be on the table. And so we don't need to talk about, you know, these really difficult things with her. And so we didn't talk about it. And I went to college and got introduced to Planned Parenthood through my university. And, was told, oh, we're here to help women and particularly low income women. And we want to keep abortion safe, legal, and rare. And that at the time, you know, that was the forward facing talking points for the media that, you know, they want to keep abortion safe, legal, and rare. They're not there to sell abortion. And that's what everybody was saying. That's what the media said. That's what presidents were saying. I mean, that was the talk, right? And so as someone who was truly ignorant about the topic of abortion, it was very easy for me to kind of fall in line with the things that they were saying.
Yeah, I think a lot of families, even Christian families, you know, they either don't address it or they address it as this clinical, detached social issue, not something that if we're being consistently biblical, consistently Christian, you know, we have to apply what we believe and know as followers of Christ to all parts of life, including this, right? It sounds like it was actually not hearing about it that made you, well, what can we say, fall prey to Planned Parenthood's lies? Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah. And it wasn't that, you know, my parents did anything wrong, I would say. It was just that at that time, culturally, people just didn't talk about abortion like we do today, right? I mean, politics was private. It was definitely a more private issue. You know, people didn't talk about who they were voting for in elections. You know, social issues, here's the deal. People were not proud of the sin that they had committed. And so you didn't have people standing up at a podium shouting their abortion, right?
Right.
You didn't have, you know, Gloria Steinem had not yet gone on, you know, the cover of Vanity Fair wearing a shirt saying, I had an abortion. So, you know, if you were a man wearing women's clothes, you did that in your bedroom, at home, at night, where nobody could see you, right?
Of course.
You weren't parading around in children's libraries doing it, right? So it was a very different time. And I think my parents were just, I think they just thought, this is not going to be something that we ever have to deal with our daughter. And so, you know, I tell parents today, this is absolutely something that you're going to have to deal with your kids, whether it's your children or your children's friends, someone that they go to school with, whatever. This sort of culture, this depraved culture, is all around us. Even if it's not in your home, it's everywhere. And so you need to be the ones talking to your children, because if it is not you, it will be someone else. And those messages that they're hearing from the world are probably not the messages that you're going to want your children to hear.
Right. We don't live in a world that's neutral to Christianity. In this country, it used to be back when we were growing up. It certainly was. You could still say I'm a Christian, and you really probably wouldn't get any kind of public boos in most corners of the country. In fact, to run for president, you were expected to consider yourself some kind of Christian. But of course, we don't live in that country anymore. Now the left is glorifying in these sins, as you described it. You're absolutely right. It's flaunting evil in a way that wasn't true just 2-3 decades ago. But I want to talk about your time at Planned Parenthood. Of course, the largest abortion provider in America. Everybody's heard that name. Unfortunately, many people have used its services. But what was it like to actually work there? You were a clinic director for how many years? And tell us what year you left.
Yeah, so I started working for Planned Parenthood in 2001. I was there for 8 years. I left in 2009. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, you know, they kind of believe that the abortion industry is like a really sad place to work, or that, you know, it would just be a really, you would go in and it would be like a really somber place to work or something like that. It was different than that. I would say that it was very much like a kind of a bunker mentality, I guess, if I had to say. Like it was like they had created a very us versus them mentality. So you felt like every day you were going to work, like you were going to war. And so, you know, we had the FBI coming in every few months. You know, we had state marshals coming in, you know, police department, all these different people coming in, fire department. They're, you know, teaching us how to, I mean, essentially do bomb sweeps in our building. The FBI are coming in, they're training us, you know, on all of these, like how to spot suspicious behaviors and essentially how not to get yourself killed while
working.
Did
you at the time believe that you're under threat from crazy right-wing fanatical Christian types who would blow you up or something?
100%. Every day when I was the director, I would walk in to the front office because we had a schedule with the initials of everybody who was working that day on the calendar. And I would go in every day, I would look at the calendar, and I would look at who was working that day, and I would think to myself, okay, if somebody walks in and they have a gun or they have a bomb or they're trying to harm somebody in this clinic, in this area, like my job as the director is to get everyone to the back and to put me up front, because if they're going to come after somebody, like I was basically thinking, I'll be, you know, the lamb to the slaughter, right? Because like I'm the director. So if they're going to come after somebody, like come after me. So every day I would go in and I would think, okay, where are all these people in the clinic? And like, if somebody comes in, how can I get all of them corralled and get them all safely to the back and me to the front? That was a daily sort of thing that I was always thinking about in my mind. So yes, you're always thinking that you're under threat. And
let me just point out the irony of having an attitude of laying down your life for other people in a place of death. I just had to point that out. You know, because of course, too, you remember back, I think it was 2013, when that crazed far left shooter shot up the Family Research Center headquarters in Washington, D.C. All this preparation, did you ever actually see anything that was genuinely threatening from an anti-abortion person, individual?
Well, I mean, sure, there were instances, you know, when when I worked at the clinic, you know, Scott Roeder shot Dr. George Tiller in the head while he was at church, right?
Right.
And so that really heightens everything, right? And so, and that the abortion industry then, of course, like attacks that, right? I mean, they're on it, you know? So they're like, see, this is why we train you guys. This is why you don't take the same way home every day, because these people out in front of your clinic, they're trying to kill you. They're just waiting for an opportunity to come after you and your family. And there, I did receive pretty serious death threats when I was at the clinic, sent to my home and sent to my personal address. And that was scary, you know? But I, you know, and, but it's, you're made to feel like we're in a war zone and it's us versus them. And my life is at stake every day. And, but it's really fueled. Okay. Because, every time you receive anything in the mail, okay. So like if we received a card from someone who was pro-life that said, I'm praying for you today, you know, we love you, whatever, right? We would turn that in a report to Planned Parenthood Federation of America as a harassment letter.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And so every month, Planned Parenthood Federation of America would send out something called hotspots. And so we would get these, you know, from all over the country, it would say like Planned Parenthood clinics received 475 harassment letters in the mail last month, right?
Prayers.
But it just sitting in a card saying, you know, we're praying for you, or we can help you get a new job, or something like that. So, yeah. And then there was this kind of environment, particularly on days where we provided abortions. It was, we didn't do abortions every day. Most Planned Parenthoods don't do abortions every day. The days that we did abortions, it was particularly evil. And I say that because you would think that an abortion clinic on the day that you're killing babies, it would be like a very quiet, very sad place, because the abortion industry makes you believe that women having abortions are doing so, and they're very contemplative about that decision. It's a very hard decision for them and things like that. But our waiting room was like a party. There were, you know, women bringing in their friends. They're, wow, you know, having food dropped off, food delivered. There are women in there that are like, oh yeah, girl, I've had, this is my fourth abortion. And they're, you know, reassuring the first timers that they're going to be fine. They're laughing it up, having a good time. They bring their kids there to the appointment.
Wow.
They're watching each other's children while they're going back there to have the abortion. What I will say, there is one place in an abortion clinic that is deeply, deeply sad, and that is the recovery room. Inside the recovery room, every woman cries. Mm-hmm. Every woman cries. It doesn't matter if she was yucking it up in the waiting room, bragging about this being her 9th, 10th, 15th abortion. When she gets in that recovery room, she's going to cry, because that is the moment where I think the reality of what she's just done, the reality of that moment, really hits her, and it comes into kind of full perspective. And, you know, we're not there to help flesh that out for her. We are there to help her dry her tears. She has 20 minutes. She has 20 minutes to suck
it
up.
And get out.
To get over it. Eat these saltine crackers. Drink this cup of water. Take your one pack of birth control pills and get out.
Well, and clearly, I mean, she's crying because she has a conscience. She was made in the image of God, right? She knows there's something wrong about this, and all of the pre-battle pumping up, you know, it can't remove any of that. I want to call back to something you said earlier I thought was extraordinary, that every day you go into work like you're preparing for battle. This is back in 2001. We expect to hear Shout Your Abortion in 2024. Back in the early 2000s, who was doing that? As you pointed out, nobody was. But I think so many Christians are waking up to the fact right now that, like, our parents' generation was not aware of, that we need to go into our places of work and into the culture every day with the same mentality of we're going into battle, not literally, but in a spiritual sense. And the fact that you had Planned Parenthood employees who were aware of that and cognizant of that 2 decades ago, well, honestly, it explains why the conservative pro-life movement has been so largely caught off guard by how radical the left has gotten in the last couple of decades, especially since you've worked there. Now, I want to turn a little bit onto when you left here, and I'd like to know the story behind that, but also, you know, the ministries that you're working right now, because you do have ministries that both help people exit the abortion mill industry, but also that help the mothers who've been damaged by this. And one of the quotes from your website, fill the gaps in the pro-life movement. Tell us how you left, what changed, and then, of course, what these gaps are that you've seen.
Yeah, I do want to make one comment about kind of like going to battle and the culture being different. I think that's such an excellent point. And I think the movement in general, I think conservatism in general, has been just consistently behind the ball. I think that we have been playing defense for so long because we really haven't known. I think people haven't realized like how sinister the other side is, because I think for us, I think particularly as Christians, we have a really hard time believing that people could be that evil, right? Mm. That an industry could be that bad. So I use this as an example. Everybody thinks that all of this, you know, cross-sex hormone therapy and everything is new to Planned Parenthood. Like, this is something they're just now getting into. We started using cross-sex hormone therapy, transitioning, which I don't believe is real, but, you know, men to women, women to men. Our first protocol was given to Planned Parenthood in 2007.
Wow. So
we've
they were
been
already
doing that in 2007.
That's unbelievable. Nearly 20 years ago, they're already paving the way for the transgender movement that we're in the thick of right now. That is unreal.
Yes. So, but people didn't really know that. And so I'm like, guys, they've been doing this forever. They've been doing this for so long. So I think we're just like, we haven't been playing the game right, because we've been playing the game kind of 2 plays behind our opponent. And so that's why I think it's important to talk to people who actually have been on that other side and understand the game that they are actually playing. But to your question, I left in 2009. There were a few things that were happening. We were building the largest abortion facility in the Western Hemisphere. It's 78,000 square feet, seven
and
stories
where is that?
Tall. It's in Houston, Texas. And we were going to be aborting babies through the 6th month of pregnancy, which was troublesome for me because I had always believed that abortion should not exist past the point of viability. And we were going to be doing those sorts of abortions now. And so that was when that was announced, that was probably the first time that I was like, oh gosh, I don't know if this is going to be the place that I work for the rest of my life, which is what I had really believed I would be doing. There had been, you know, this callus that had really formed around my heart after working there for so long. My heart had just become so calloused. And I think that all of these things were happening just kind of one after another. And I think that was God kind of chiseling away, like tapping at that hardness in my heart, just trying to break it apart. And so the opening of that facility, or kind of breaking ground on that facility, was one thing. We had some issues with clients. We had to pay hush money to some patients that we had, there had been some negligence, some medical malpractice take place. We had left parts of their babies inside of them after abortion. And they had become septic and almost died in the hospital. Now that I was the director, now that I was in charge of everything, I was the person that was having to hand the checks over to these women as hush money and make, you know, I was having, in order to get the money, they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that they would never talk about this situation again. And that felt really gross, considering that these were all very poor women and we were literally only giving them like $1,000. And I knew that if they came forward and sued us, they could get hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, and let me point out, Planned Parenthood is worth hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues every single year. This is not an organization that is, you know, poor and catering to the poor. This is an ultra wealthy lobbying organization as well.
Yes. And so that just felt really gross to me. That did not feel right. We had always had an abortion quota, a certain number of abortions that we had to sell to women coming into our clinics. That was how we came up with our budget. And I guess I never really thought much about that, but
but then, in a few words, you've already described it's no longer safe, legal, or rare if you can go in there at 6 months, nearly die in the process, and oh, by the way, here, come back next week for another one.
There's a quota,
this is
right?
Obscene.
Yeah, and but now we were being told, I was being told as a director that I was going to have to double my abortion quota for the upcoming year, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, what are we doing? You know, I was the regional trainer for basically abortion normalization. So I was having to go into all of these clinics all over the country and train the staff on how to sell abortion to patients. And it just became really yuck. And so all those things had happened. And then eventually I was really questioning what I was doing, and, but still there, you know, the money was good. And I couldn't imagine leaving, because I thought, if I leave, I'm not just leaving a job, I'm really leaving my identity. This was who I had become. I was a pro-choice Planned Parenthood feminist, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is who I was. I did not know who I was going to be outside of that. And so it was very scary to even think about leaving and getting another job. But eventually I was called in to assist with an ultrasound guided abortion on a 13-week-old baby. And wow. I witnessed a 13-week-old baby, fully formed baby, fight and struggle against the abortion instruments. I'd never seen anything like that before. And I knew then that, you know, we were not fighting for reproductive justice. There was no justice in that procedure. There really wasn't even choice. I mean, we didn't give that woman an opportunity to look at her ultrasound. We didn't describe what was happening. We didn't give her proper informed consent. And there was certainly no choice for that baby. And I just thought, you know, what I witnessed was the intentional, it was the deliberate killing of an innocent human being. And there's a word for that in our society, and we call it murder. And I knew that's what I had witnessed. And I thought, I can never be a part of this again. And so I left.
Yes. Now, well, you made the right choice. Now, you, one of your ministries works with people in the abortion industry and helps them leave. I imagine teaching them you can have a life and identity outside of Planned Parenthood or, you know, NARAL or Marie Stopes or any of this. I imagine that's a large part of it based on your experience. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And also helping them really take accountability for what they've done, because, you know, there's a lot of people that have worked in the industry, but maybe they didn't, you know, maybe they just answered phones or they just took the payment, right, for the abortion. They weren't actually in the room. They didn't actually, you know, have much to do with the abortion. And so, you know, they call us and they're like, well, I didn't really do anything that bad, you know, trying to kind of throw off blame. And I'm like, okay, but how did you get paid? Right? Like, where did your money come from on your paycheck? And so having them like come to a full taking account, right, for their responsibility, that you are involved in an industry that murdered innocent children. So it doesn't matter like how on the periphery you were of this industry. Like, if your paycheck came from that, if you were involved in any way, then you have to take accountability for that. And so, you know, that's kind of like the first step. I always tell people, you can't heal if you don't know what you're healing from. And so that's, you know, one thing we help them do. But absolutely, finding identity outside of being a, you know, this abortion supporter, kind of this feminist ally or whatever. Yes, we have to help them do that. And our goal is to help them find their identity in Christ.
Yes, right. Well, you can't repent if you don't know what you're repenting from. I mean, remember, repent literally means change your mind in the original Greek. You have to have a mind to change, right? You know, most people, changing gears here, most people aren't aware that one of the biggest donors to pro-abortion causes is Warren Buffett, the famous Berkshire Hathaway mega donor. He's not actually a conservative. He only lives like a conservative, but his money goes to funding Planned Parenthood and NARAL and these groups that are pushing for unlimited access to, quote unquote, women's reproductive health. One of the things that Buffett funded about two decades ago was the research for the drugs that now comprise mail-in abortifacients. So there's organizations, I don't know if Planned Parenthood is one of them, but you can actually apply for and receive in the mail these at-home abortion pills to do it in, I believe, the first trimester. Abby, do you see this as the next front after Roe v. Wade was killed a couple of years ago in this war to abolish abortion? And what should we be on the lookout if it is?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. This is the next fight. I mean, this has been a fight for a while. I think people didn't realize how rampant it was. You know, Warren Buffett in 2007 started something called the Justice Fund. It's an interesting name, but it's called the Justice Fund, and that. He funded abortion facilities over, at the time, that first year, it was over $30 million for low-income women to have abortions. And, you know, people will ask, like, why? Like, why does he care about abortion? Warren Buffett is a population control guy.
Right.
And so he wants to get rid of minorities, basically. He wants to get rid of poor people. And so abortion is one of the ways that he wants to do that. He wants to help poor people kill their children. You know, he doesn't want to set up community resources for them. He doesn't want to set up scholarship programs so that these moms and dads can get educations and further themselves and better themselves to get better employment. He doesn't want to, you know, help set up fatherhood programs or anything like that. Just let's just kill their children as if that's going to get them out of poverty, which we know statistically that doesn't help.
And he spent about $5 billion in the last 2 decades to do that. All this money is counted as charity by the IRS, but all of it is going to fund this kind of lobbying and actual killing. Loving your neighbor by killing him seems a little bit, you know, self-contradictory here, but there you have it.
Yeah. So, yeah, Warren Buffett has been the largest funder of abortion over the past few years. And the abortion pill is, I mean, that's the next... that's the next war on abortion. I think, you know, eventually probably about 80% of abortions are going to be committed by pill. There are over 70 websites currently where women can access these abortion pills online. You don't have to give them an ID. You don't have to give them a real name. You don't have to give them a real date of birth. They don't check anything. You don't have to have an ultrasound. They don't check to make sure that the pregnancy is in your uterus and that it's not ectopic. You never speak to a physician. You never speak to a nurse. I mean, you never talk to any sort of medical personnel. And I know this because I've gone through the process, like pretending to be a patient. I never talked to any sort of medical personnel. I pretended like I was 16 years old. I told them I didn't have an ID. They said that was fine. In fact, what they said was to write my name down, write my date of birth down, hold it up by my face, take a picture, and that would suffice as an ID.
Oh, wow.
And so I did that next to my daughter, who is 17. I did that next to my, so that I'm not going to pass as a 16-year-old. So I did that next to my daughter and submitted the picture. They said that was totally fine. And they sent me the link to pay $115. And they said, once we receive the $115, we will promptly mail you the abortion pills to whatever address you write in as the shipping address. And so, you know, medication abortion pills are significantly more dangerous. They're 4 times more dangerous than a surgical abortion, which is dangerous enough as it is. You know, these women do not understand what they're getting into. They do not understand that they're going to be seeing, you know, a fully formed human being floating in the toilet. They do not understand that they're going to then be faced with the decision of, do I flush my baby down the toilet? Do I pick my baby up? Do I bury it in my backyard? What do I do with this baby? And that's what we're hearing on our hotline. Our Loveline hotline. That's what pregnancy centers are experiencing. These women are calling, they're going into pregnancy centers and they have their babies and they're holding them in their hands. They have them in Ziploc bags and they're like, I don't know what to do with this baby. Help me. And we don't even know what the psychological ramifications are going to be for this. But I do think we're going to see increased suicidal ideation. I think we're going to see increased suicides in women. We're going to see increased anxiety, depression, eating disorders, self-harm. And everybody's going to go, what is wrong with women? Women are just going crazy, right? But it's not that women are going crazy. It's that we have put women in a situation where they're killing their own children and they're doing it by their own hand. And then they're having to make these terrible decisions about what to do with their babies' bodies. And that is really hard for women to deal with, but we've done it to them.
I mean, listen, folks, you have a place to take your dead and dying puppy, your dog, right, or cat, but you don't have a place to take your dead child. I mean, that is abortion in the United States in 2024. So don't let anybody tell you we have not gone completely out of our minds on this issue or that the progressive left does not love death. Now, Abby, staying on this subject, this grim subject, it is an election year, and abortion is being talked about on the left and the right, and you hear constant disagreement about how pro-life conservatives need to approach it. You know, there are some who think that this is abortion is a winning issue to the left and a loser on the right. I don't think they're correct about that, by the way. But they advise that conservatives should moderate their stance on abortion or simply ignore the issue altogether. And are they right? Should we tack to the middle? And if they're wrong, what is the winning message for people who are consistently pro-life, the hardliners, if you will?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a hardliner on this issue. I'm pro-life without exception. And I believe that one of the reasons we've gotten to this point where we have so much compromise, where we have so many politicians and political pundits telling us that we need to become more moderate, is because we have compromised for so many years. I mean, if you look at bills that are put forward in state legislatures, anytime there is a rape and incest exception put into a bill, it's not put in by a Democrat, it's put in by a Republican.
Right.
And yet these are the same Republicans that are getting the endorsements of these pro-life legislative groups. And I'm like, why do we keep giving them our endorsement? If you're putting in an exception to murder a child, any child, you should not be receiving a pro-life endorsement because you're not pro-life. We believe as pro-lifers that life begins at conception, no matter how that child was conceived, period. Life begins at conception. And so I think that our message, you know, has to be that we are pro-life, that we believe in women, that women and babies have equal dignity from the moment of conception, that we don't believe that a woman's rights outweigh a child's rights, and we don't believe that a child's rights outweigh a woman's rights. We believe that they're equal. And because of that, we believe they have equal value. And so we want to promote life for both. And I think that has to be the target message. No one's rights, you know, our rights stop when they begin to oppress the rights of another person. Mm. That's why slavery ended. That's why the Jewish Holocaust ended. We went to war over what we're doing right now to children in the womb.
We have to
take a strong stand on this. And I mean, I've got to be honest with you, and a lot of people disagree with me on this, but like my daughter and her generation, her friends, they're also very hardliners, no compromise, pro-lifers. They don't believe in this 15-week ban nonsense. They don't believe in any of that. You know, I would rather lose election after election after election if it means that eventually this younger generation is going to rise up and get it right. So I'd rather lose over and over and over again if it means that at the end of this, we win it all. Because finally, a generation rises up and says, no, we're not going to compromise anymore. Because my child, they look at what, you know, like my parents, they look at what they've given us, like this boomer generation, they look at that and they go, why did you compromise so much? Mm. Why did you allow so much compromise? Why did you leave this for us? And they're tired of it. They're done with it. And so I believe they will be the generation that once they start voting, they rise up and they stop the compromise. And if we lose every election until that happens, I'm willing to lose.
Yes, if we're going to be great, we have to start by being good. I just want to point out that to folks who think that we need those rape and incest exemptions, right, they need to understand that what you're doing is you're making the child, the baby, pay for the sins of the father. That is not biblical. That's not what we believe. Even if you're not a Christian, you're simply a conservative. Nobody thinks that that is righteous or just. Abby, last question. Where can listeners find your work?
Yeah, so they can go to my website, abbyj.com, and my podcast is there, my books are there, the link to my film Unplanned is there. and my ministries, and then there were none, and ProLove Ministries, they're all linked theirs too. So everything about me and all the things I do are right there on my website.
Abby Johnson, appreciate you joining the show. And we appreciate you folks for tuning in and supporting conservative pro-life voices that are working to expose the truth about the rot spreading through this once great country. Remember that it's only by working together and by praying together that we can restore the United States of America to greatness under Almighty and Sovereign God. Tune in next week as the battle rages on.
First Right, a new kind of news summary without the liberal slant. Every morning, in your inbox, always free. Subscribe by texting First Right to 30161. That's First Right, all caps, one word, to 30161.